close look. This girl is half his age.
Hi, this is Brad Mast, and this is the special coronavirus podcast on Real Talk. In this Real Talk segment, we're not going to talk real estate. We're going to talk about the economic effects of shutting down our economy for a virus. When I do Real Talk, I usually talk about real estate law, and how government policy affects your real estate. And of course, this coronavirus certainly is affecting our real estate, and it is government policy that's affecting it. But this is a Real Talk section where I'm going to talk about things that we're not allowed to talk about, questions we're not allowed to ask, things that when I post on my Facebook, I am inundated with medical professionals, with people who are all sorts of fans of the things we're doing in the country right now, and particularly in California, that they believe are saving us from all killing ourselves. And I have said from the very beginning, if this is a policy that we can shut down all businesses to save lives, how do you set the line as to when that policy is enacted? In the future, can we shut down businesses if there's a bad flu year? Can we say social distancing will work no matter what's going on? Can you say, look, we think that this particular disease, whatever it is going to cause lots of deaths, and every life saved is worth ending our economy? I mean, that's the question I've asked from the beginning. I also said, and still say, that what we're doing right now is the equivalent of finding a black widow spider on our baby. We know that that black widow is dangerous, and it's on my baby. We know I don't want that black widow to bite my baby. So I have lots of choices of action. If the black widow bites my baby could become very sick. How do I save my baby? I think that what I would probably do is very carefully sweep the spider aside, if possible, and then stomp on it and kill it. Right? That's what you would probably do. But here's what I think we have done. We've said we have a black widow spider in the world that's ready to bite anyone. And to stop this spider from biting people, we're going to get a sledgehammer. And while it's sitting on the baby's head, we're going to smash the black widow spider with a sledgehammer. I think we really are dealing with this coronavirus like a spider that we hit with a sledgehammer. We've shut down everything. We've shut down everything except essential businesses, and now the police state tells us what are essential businesses. And this is what my rant is about. This is what my concern is about, is this unlimited police power. And we've seen how it's already acting out throughout the nation. We know that there are things we've been asked to do that we'll say, okay, we're willing to do certain things, the social distancing things, those kinds of things. Okay, we're willing to take a good look at those. But how has the police power of the state already abused those things? I can tell you the things I know. This is the day before Easter on April 11th. These are the things that we've already seen are happening throughout the United States, including in California. We're seeing that a pastor who held a church service where people drove up in their cars, parked in the parking lot, and turned on their radios to listen to the church service, each one in their own individual car, windows rolled up, and the pastor was in the church delivering the sermon on a radio transmitter so they could hear it. And the police came, 20 police cars came, and cited the parishioners for unlawful assembly during a coronavirus shutdown. Okay, this is stopping the religious freedom. We've also seen them come after people for almost every single business that they think is not essential. I've talked about golf courses. Here's the thing. Golf courses put you outside, and the golf courses said we can follow CDC guidelines. We can take away all the touch points. We can make sure there's social distancing. We can do all the things to comply with being outside, with being, you know, in groups without touching. Only one person per golf cart, unless you're family members, or removing everything, rakes from the sand traps, ball washers, etc. And yet golf courses are shut down throughout California. Right now, it looks like 50% of the counties have said no golfing. 50% allow us to golf. That's just another example. We also know about the woman back east. She went for a drive. She was 19 years old. She was tired of being in her little apartment, and she thought she could just go for a drive. So while she was out for a drive, a policeman pulled her over. The policeman said that her tail light was out and asked her what the purpose of her drive was. She didn't know her rights, that she could remain silent, take a ticket for a tail light that was supposedly out, which it turned out later it was still working. And so she told the truth, that she was just out for a drive, and she was given a ticket. The ticket she was given could have a fine of $200 or up to 6 months in jail. Again, this is police power of the state run amok. She wasn't hurting anyone. She wasn't infecting anyone. She wasn't going to harm anyone. So let's talk about police power and what can the state do to us, what will we allow them to do to us in this coronavirus environment. I'm going to repeat one more time because people are going to attack me about this. I understand this is a very infectious virus. It's more infectious than the flu. It also is more aggressive than the flu. And when it gets into the respiratory system, it's horrible. But I'm going to tell you how it gets in the respiratory system in a few minutes that wasn't understood before, and also why people don't like what I'm saying, because I'm reading, and I'm reading every day about what's going on. And no, I'm not a doctor. No, I don't play a doctor on the radio, on TV, or anywhere else. But I am a person that reads and tries to learn from experience. So listen, I understand that this is more communicable than the flu. I understand that it can have worse effects than the flu. But I said in the beginning that this virus is probably going to be the ugly cousin of the flu. And I was told, stop saying that. This is much worse. This is a pandemic. This is the Black Plague. And I said, this is not Ebola, folks. This is not Ebola. It's a very aggressive flu, five times perhaps as communicable as the flu. But when we're all through, I would tell you that the deaths from this won't be much greater than the normal deaths that we would see from respiratory illnesses, from pneumonia, from folks that have things that lead them to these kinds of things, influenza, heart problems, those kinds of things. But you know what? We don't record how many of those deaths there are as carefully as we're recording coronavirus deaths. So if somebody had high blood pressure, had a heart attack, and they also had diabetes, and then they got the flu and they died, do you think that the death certificate in California or anywhere else would say they died from the flu? And the answer is no. The doctors would not say the cause of death was influenza. They would talk about the other underlying conditions and say a contributing factor was the flu. But coronavirus is completely different. The way coronavirus is reported, which is why we have to watch the numbers very closely, is that with coronavirus, if you die of anything, the cause of death is coronavirus if you had it at the time of death. In fact, some states, if it looks like it was coronavirus, even if they didn't test, they're reporting it as coronavirus as the cause of death. We've never done that before with deaths. In fact, in California, if you have the flu and you die, If you are under 65, there's nothing that mentions the flu whatsoever in it. They only record influenza deaths over 65, so it's really hard to get the true numbers of how many people are dying from coronavirus versus the seasonal flu. And again, I'm going to take this back one more time because I know people are not going to be happy with me for talking about this. But here's the numbers in California in 2017. In 2017, the number of people that died from influenza, the flu, pneumonia, or respiratory distress was a little over 20,000. Okay, just over 20,000 people, 20,000 and some change, which represents 55 deaths per day. And we're right now at about the peak of what we've seen of the deaths from the COVID virus in California that we've seen. Hopefully it is the peak because it looks like it's going down, but it's a weekend and you can't tell because they're just not releasing all the numbers. But our big day so far has been 44 deaths. Remember that the average per day in the past of things not counting coronavirus of these same things was 55 people per day. Again, this is not much greater than the flu. And here's been the issue all along. So here's what we're going to be told by the experts. And by the way, the experts that modeled this flu, the experts that told us how the coronavirus would act, are the same people who modeled global warming and said man-caused global warming is destroying the world, there'll be no ice caps by 2015, etc., etc., etc. These are the same models. These are the people that said 2.2 million people will die if we don't do something. Then it's going to be 1 to 2 million people. Then it's going to be 200,000 to 2 million people. Then it's going to be 100,000 to 220,000 people. But oh, wait. This 3.5 weeks of what we've done has been so wonderful that as of today, we're predicting it might only be 60,000 people. So let me tell you that in a bad flu year, how many people die? How many people from influenza in the U.S. do they estimate die in a bad year? 60 to 70,000 people. I still predict it'll be less than 60,000 people, but that's because we're learning how to treat this new very, very virulent flu, and we're learning lots of things about it. That's the other thing that I'm constantly attacked about, is posting the information on what are the newest treatments and how are they working. So back to the point of beginning about how many people is this affecting. Right now in California, it's not as bad as the flu. And I'm going to give you the numbers for the city of Visalia and Tulare County, because this is where I live and I just want to kind of put it in perspective. Gary Herbst, who is the hospital administrator at Cuyah Delta, says this is the calm before the storm and they're prepared for it and they're prepared for this pandemic that's going to wipe them out. They have 450 beds at the hospital at Cuyah Delta, and because they're no longer doing elective surgeries and people are being careful not to go to the hospital, if they don't have to go to the hospital, they're treating them in other ways, possibly at home, but anywhere that they could treat them somewhere different than the hospital. Right now, out of our 450 beds, 228 are taken, meaning that we're just over 50%. And in fact, this is probably the lowest patient load in our hospital that we have seen, I don't know since when, but since Gary Herbst has been there, and he was originally not the administrator, but in the 10 years he's been there, this is the lowest patient load they've ever seen. So on the other side of the coin, we want to talk about the respirators in Tulare County. So at our hospital at Cuyah Delta, Gary Herbst says we only have 100 respirators, and right now 50 of them are in use. And they're prepared to try to find more respirators if they need them, but they're using 50% of the respirators that they have. Of the respirators that they have, 50 are in use, and how many are coronavirus patients? And the answer is 4. How many patients are currently being treated in Cuyah Delta because they have coronavirus? And the answer is 5. So 80% of the people that are there have gone on to or have gone into a respirator situation where they have to be intubated and they're put under. But that represents just a very, very, very small percentage of all the respirators that we have available. Again, they say, well, we're just being prepared. We want to know what's happening in the future. We want to know where this is going to go. So let's talk about the treatment for this new flu. So here's what we're finding out, and this is, again, things that make people very mad, especially since President Trump announced that there is a malaria drug out there that seems to be very successful in helping with the symptoms of this coronavirus. And because of Trump derangement syndrome, they're fighting it with everything they can fight it with. And that is the fact that there is a treatment that really helps with this. It's called hydroxychloroquine, or hydroxychloroquine. I'm not sure how you pronounce it because I'm not a medical doctor and I'd never heard of it before this happened. It's a malaria drug that was approved in 1955. It's also used to treat lupus. It's also used to treat malaria. And so ever since President Trump said that this drug shows positive results and it shows that there may be a chance and let's try it and let's use it, the left has been attacking this hydroxychloroquine. They've been after it like this is the worst thing in the world. Trump is a quack. If I, Brad Maskey, say it works, I'm a quack. But why am I saying that it works? I'll tell you why I'm saying it works, because I'm reading about studies where it's been used and where it's been used in great numbers of patients, and it's been helping. And what are those numbers? I'll give you the easiest one. There's a Hasidic Jewish doctor in New York who started using hydroxychloroquine very early on. In fact, I think it's 2.5 weeks ago that he first started using it. Might be 3 weeks now. And what he did is when patients came into his hospital, he triaged the patients as they came in, the hospital, his medical care. I think that there are 21 doctors within his clinic that they treat about 30,000 people, or that's who they help within their area. And here's what he did is when they first started coming in, he triaged them. And he knew that this virus hurt people who were older. He knew that if you had compromised immune systems, he knew that if you had been on chemotherapy, any of those things, you were high risk. And the second they came in and they had the symptoms and they tested for the COVID, he immediately put them on a treatment of hydroxychloroquine combined with zinc, combined with a Z-Pak, which is what you would fight respiratory or flu-type illnesses, unless they had heart issues. And if they had heart issues, there's another something similar to a Z-Pak that's been used for years, and he would give it to those folks. He then would take the other folks who were sick, the patients who came in, who had it, who were strong, had minor symptoms, and he sent them home and treated it like a flu with fluids and with the other things you would treat the flu with, but told them if the symptoms got worse, come in and let's get you on this other treatment regimen in which they use the hydroxychloroquine. So this is called anecdotal evidence. As of last Tuesday, in their practice, they've had 1,400 patients test positive. 1,400 test positive for COVID. Of the 1,400, zero have gone to the hospital and zero have gone on a respirator, which tells us that this is something that works. So now we come to the question of why does this work? Why does a malaria drug help people that have the flu? And this is where it gets really interesting. So I was reading an article by a chemist, and this chemist is not a medical doctor, but he did go back and he looked at 100 dead people in Italy. And part of it was autopsies, blood oxygen levels, all of those things. And here's what he found out that he said, this is completely different than what you would expect. What happens when you get the coronavirus, the COVID-19, is that for some reason, the way that it affects your blood and your hemoglobin is it stops its ability to store oxygen. And that's what your blood has to do. Your blood takes oxygen to your muscles, takes oxygen to all of the organs in your body, and it pulls out the CO3 and helps you to live and survive. That's what your blood does. That's part of its function. And the way this virus works is it stops your blood from carrying oxygen. And I won't go into the chemical reactions and all of those things about it, but that's what it does. And what does hydroxychloroquine do? It enables your blood to carry oxygen. It enables it to absorb zinc, which helps to fight disease and all of those things, and it enables your blood to oxygenate. And so in studying these patients who are going into respiratory distress, because they have this virus, and this is what they talk about, is the symptoms of it are, I can't breathe, I feel like I'm smothering. And these people have come into hospitals, and when they measure their blood oxygen levels, their blood oxygen levels could be at 70. Put that in perspective. If you have a blood oxygen level under 93, it's a blood saturation level that they measure. If it's under 93, they're worried about you. Normal people have 93 to 100, 95, 96, 97, 98. These people were coming in with saturation levels under 90, under 80. But what was interesting is they felt like they were smothering. They're still able to talk. They're still fighting to be here. Their organs haven't failed yet, which is what the concern is when that happens. And so the natural reaction, if you're in a hospital and somebody comes in and they're having respiratory distress and their oxygen saturation levels are that low, you must put them on a ventilator. And that's how you've treated those kinds of things all of your life. That's what you've been taught to do, is that their organs will fail if they're not put on a ventilator. But guess what? Putting COVID patients on a ventilator, according to the studies in Italy, show that you're probably killing them. In fact, only 10% of the patients put on a ventilator for COVID in Italy survived. 80% of the patients who were not put on the ventilator, that were using a CPAP, using oxygen, using everything else, even though they had horrible oxygen levels, 80% of those folks survived. So 90% death rate if you're put on the ventilator, 80% if you don't have to get on it. And lots of the folks that were not put on a ventilator, they wanted to put them on a ventilator, but they didn't have enough ventilators to do it. So what did they do? They used everything else they could to keep them alive during that time frame. So we're seeing that there's a learning curve, and the learning curve, I'm told, is going 1,000 miles an hour. No one can keep up with it. That says that ventilating these patients is probably not the best thing to do. If you can do anything else to help them, like hydroxychloroquine with some other things given with it, that you probably have a much better success rate at saving these patients. So I'm not a doctor, but when I talk about this and say, look, at you know, we have a learning curve, we can do this, we don't have to destroy our economy in order to do this, I'm told that I should shut up, that I should just stay home, I shouldn't risk people's lives, that I don't care about lives, I only care about the economy. And I have to tell you that I do care about people's lives. And I know that being alive has risk. But I don't see this as the Black Plague. I don't see it as the bubonic plague. I see this as an economy-destroying virus. And the economy destroying portion of it is caused by government intervention, by experts telling us what to do, and these experts don't even know what they're doing most of the time. They're modeling things, and they're saying in a worst case scenario, this is what's going to happen, so this is what we must do to stop this worst case scenario. And the thing is, you'll never prove them wrong. they're going to say that, look, if we wouldn't have done all the things we did in America, 2 million people would have died. But because we destroyed our economy and created a great recession or probably a depression, we saved all these lives. And if it turns out there's only 60,000 deaths, which is a bad flu season, they're going to say, see how good we are. Look at what we did. You can't prove them wrong. But I'm back to what I said at the beginning. I think that what they did is they saw a black widow spider on top of their baby, and they hit it with a sledgehammer. And the sledgehammer may have killed the baby and the black widow at the same time. Because how many people will die because of depression? How many people will go through the next 10 years, 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, without being reemployed? I think this is the worst thing we could have done to our economy. So I'm going to take a short break from lecturing about what I think we should do and pontificating about how much I know. And when I come back, I'm going to tell you what I think we should do to save our economy versus what we're doing, how we restart our economy, and how soon can we start doing the things that I want us to start doing.
Can't touch this. My music hits me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me with a mind to rhyme and to hype me. It feels good when you know you're down. A super dope homeboy from the Oak Town, and I'm known as such, and this is a beat you can't touch. I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we live.
That's right. Can't touch this. Social distancing. So to start our economy back up, I say we could do some of the things we're already doing. If you want to take a look at it, we have grocery stores open. We have hardware stores open. We have all kinds of stores open. And what they're doing is limiting how many customers are inside the stores at any one time. They're asking them to stand apart. There's masks. There's all of those things that they're using. Why can't we reopen virtually every business there is if they will incorporate those kinds of things? I mean, you could go buy furniture, right? Have you ever seen a furniture store so full that you weren't social distancing? You could do furniture stores. You can open almost every single retail store and ask them to incorporate social distancing. Ask them to do the kinds of things that we're doing in the grocery stores, that we're doing at Home Depot, that we're doing at Lowe's, that we're doing everywhere we go right now. Why are they specialed out as a store where you're social distancing here? I also think you could open restaurants, and I think that restaurants could start serving people where we sit at tables and where perhaps the servers wear masks, where there's hand washing stations, so they're certain to keep cleaning things. But I think that we have to start immediately to reopen those things. I think the parks need to be open yesterday. I think you ask the people not to get too close in the parks. And I understand that if children are playing on the stuff, they touched it, and then they went somewhere else, then have some way for them to wash their hands. But I think that we should be allowing what we call herd immunity to start. Herd immunity is the 50% of the people that get COVID that do not have any symptoms, and their symptoms are so small they don't know what they are, and they start to pass it on. And why do I say 50%? Because I talk about Iceland. Iceland is a small, small area. The country has 369,000 people, I believe. 10% of them have been tested. And they found that 50% of the people tested that had it had no symptoms whatsoever. I also believe that the people that live in California have been exposed to this and have had it since at least November, certainly no later than December. And I think that it's not nearly as deadly as we think it is. But I do think that if we don't start opening businesses now, and now meaning before the end of April, certainly no later than May 1st, and saying, here's the rules. You can play golf. Here's the rules. You can go to the parks. You can go back into the national parks. We need to go back to work. We can't have everyone unemployed. We can't print money forever. We can take some reasonable suggestions about all of those things, but at some point, life needs to come back to normal. I've seen people scared to death about this virus. I mean, so afraid that they look around like, don't get near me. Don't touch this. Don't touch me. Don't come close. You're too close to me. Don't stand so close to me. Thereby my theme music today. But I'm telling you that I understand that this hurts people who are at risk. I understand that this virus is more communicable than the flu, but I don't think it's worth destroying our economy over, because destroying the economy will destroy way more lives than those who would have died. I also think that it's just plain not fair that we're doing this to everybody instead of trying to use something more like a scalpel than a sledgehammer. And we're using a sledgehammer. I'm also concerned about the police powers of the state. And once they have power, they misuse the power. They overuse the power. And if we save just one life, we have to do this. We have to do this. And I think that life can go back to normal without us fearing dying. And I think that we need news people to be more diligent in their reporting. I think all of us need to be more diligent in reading and getting informed about what's going on. And for my Easter message, again, remember that He is risen. God has forgiven us. God has a plan. God saw all of this way before we saw it. And He knows what's going to happen. And He knows what's going to work out. But we also have a responsibility to do the right thing, to help our friends and our neighbors, and to take care of us. America is one of the greatest countries in the world, and I hate to see us destroyed by something that looks to me like this is part of the New World Order to say, can we do this? Because if we can do it now, we can do it in the next flu season, we can do it for almost anything. They tried and they tried with man-caused global warming to shut down our economy, to prove that we needed the government to take care of us, the government to write all checks, the government to do everything, tell us what to do, what to produce, and when to do it. And they failed. But they're succeeding right now with this. And again, I understand there's people being hurt, there's people dying, there's risk. I'm not going to underplay that it's not something that's dangerous, but is it so dangerous that we had to destroy the most booming economy in the world, the most booming economy in world history, and all the things we've done to help people? And I think we need to start back as soon as we can start back. I'm Brad Maskey, and this is Real Talk, and this has been my special COVID edition of Real Talk. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me. And please, if you have any comments, anything you want to talk about, go to my Facebook page, Brad Maskey on Facebook, and you can comment there. If you have private comments that you want to give because you're afraid you'll be attacked like I'm always attacked, then please send me an email at realtalkbrad@gmail.com. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks for listening to Real Talk. Real Talk has been a Brad Maskey production.